This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Transmission time with Jane and Lauren. We're actually both in the studio tonight, which makes a big change.
We are, and we're here with Aqua, which is, I haven't heard that one for a long time. Jane, the candy man?
Lollipop.
Lollipop. Okay, is that what it's called?
It actually goes by two names. So it's Candyman and, in brackets, Lollipop.
Life from a transgender perspective, it's always good to go by two names, isn't it?
Yes, I did that for years.
Yes. So we'll be talking about trans issues and what's going on in around the world in regard to trans people for the next hour. But a big thank you to the crew from Different Strokes. And we're here until, who's on at nine, Jane?
On at nine is Her Society.
Oh, that's right, Ginny and Nat. Okay, cool. What's on the show, Jane? You've been producing today. What have you produced?
We are going to have a little discussion about cross-dressing. We're going to talk about pumpers. And we might leave a definition of that to a little bit later. Murder and losing your identity. Treatment in prisons.
You do tend to lose a bit of identity after murder, don't you?
You do, yes. And if we get round to it, we've got transport and a world roundup, but I doubt whether we're going to get through to that. We just have so much programmed.
Transport. Okay, look for transport. Look forward to that one. So what have you been up to while you've been away? You were missing, weren't you, last week?
Yes.
Holidaying?
My partner's dad was seriously in hospital.
That's not much of a holiday for anybody.
No, it was a very stressful week up in the country, but he seems to be on the recovery now, which is good. And I actually had a couple of relaxing days once we got back to Melbourne. We went to the home show, didn't spend any money there. A lot of nice things that we could do around the house, but a lot of money.
Why do you always go to the home show?
Just to get ideas, that's all. Okay. Whether we put them into practice or not is another matter, but yeah, it's a nice sort of three or four hours walking around the place.
Oh, is this okay? I can imagine 3 or 4 hours sitting in a bar would be a hell of a lot more fun. But
it could
okay.
be, yes. And two of us, my partner and myself, we spent about 3 or 4 hours tidying up fallen trees around our place and branches that come off trees and all that sort of stuff.
Have you had some wind out your way outer suburbs?
It's been collecting for you years.
Do you not just burn it? Cut it up and burn, have like a, open fire or something?
Well, the bonfire is planned and it's all pushed together, ready to go.
But do you not have a fire in your house?
No.
Oh, okay.
Too much work, Lauren.
Oh, heaven forbid, Jane. Heaven forbid that you got to cut it up. It keeps you warm. It's a good thing.
Yes, the open fires are very nice, but they also, my experience has been they tend to be very smoky and make your ceilings dirty, and I hate cleaning out fireplaces the following morning.
Oh, okay.
So I cheat. You turn on the switch and the heat comes on.
Fair enough. And what else? What's this acoustic neuroma? What's that?
My partner has or had an acoustic neuroma, which is a tumour inside the ear. And she's a member of, we're both members of the Acoustic Neuroma Association now. And it was the annual general meeting. And I'm afraid Kath wasn't quite fast enough on sitting on her hands and she said something at the wrong time and she ended up on the committee.
Oh dear. And you?
I sat on my hands.
Oh, okay.
That's the best thing to do at AGMs, and keep your mouth shut.
Well, best just not to go, I think, if you really don't want to get caught. But, I mean, you've been volunteering for 30 years, and you still volunteer and do a lot of the technical stuff here. So I think you've got more than enough things to do, haven't you?
That's why I sat on my hands at this meeting.
Fair enough. I've been fairly quiet since, I went through all of the Brisbane stuff last week with Rebecca and the gay nightclubs, and I tested out the gay scene in Brisbane and it was really nice, but I won't go over all ground. It is a nice place to go to, and they're very warm and friendly up there, especially warm.
Well, it's a much warmer climate.
Well, yes, it is. So now, apart from that, I've just been working really this weekend. Yeah.
Not good, Lauren.
A bit sad. Well, I'm looking forward to summer. We got a taste of it in the last couple of days.
Yeah, the weather has been sort of quite nice. My house was very pleasant today with the sun streaming in through the windows. Lovely.
Oh, really?
And the solar panels on the roof and the electricity meter running backwards. That's great.
Oh, you've got all that. Really? Yeah. Do you pump electricity back into the grid?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We've been doing
that. Is it cost effective?
Oh, the payback period's quite a long time, especially since I haven't got one of those smart meters where you get more money for the electricity than what it actually costs you, whereas mine, it's an old mechanical meter, and it just runs backwards. and the counters run backwards. It's great. I suppose I have a little bit of a philosophical issue with sort of being paid excessive rates for electricity, because you get about 60 cents or something for the electricity, whereas I pay 22, and basically what it does is to push the price of electricity up, which is not why I bought the panels in the first place.
Oh, I see. So if you have solar panels, you're actually pushing the price of electricity up for everyone else.
To my mind, you are, because you're being paid more than what their wholesale rate for electricity is.
What about their retail rate? You paid 22 cents an erg or whatever
it comes in. I think it's about 22 cents per kilowatt hour, and I have a friend who's getting 65 cents per kilowatt hour in the electricity that she sells back to the grid.
So they have to resell that at 85 cents and
But they don't.
To me. Oh, what do they do with that?
Because the amount of electricity going back into the grid is relatively small to what they're buying in from their major wholesalers, it just tends to push the price up a little bit to everybody.
Unless we all get solar panels.
Yes, then it might really push the price up.
Well, only to those who don't have them, which is probably everyone in the inner city and in apartments and what have you. No, I haven't got them, but I have heard that the payback period is huge. But does it cut the cost of your electricity? Is that part of your payback? I know it's not why we're on air, but I'm interested, so I figure somebody else must.
Our bill dropped by about $20 to $30 a quarter.
Oh, really? Mm. On a what? A $500 bill?
No, ours was about $350, I think it was. And it's dropped down a bit.
Oh, there you go. It hasn't dropped down a whole lot then.
No,
about 10%. $20,000 worth of solar panels. And you'd be worried every time there's hailstones, wouldn't you?
Fortunately, we haven't had one yet.
Hailstones?
We haven't had one since I've had the panels up.
Oh, okay. What if one of those bloody great big trees that you're talking about lands on the house? I suppose you'd have more to worry about than the solar panels, won't
you?
Well,
there aren't any trees near the house. They all went years ago.
Oh, you're very well organised.
I try to be.
Transmission time with Jane and Lauren. Studio's getting warm, Jane.
Live
from a transgender perspective with Jane and Lauren. You have a topic of the week. That's a bit exciting.
Been doing this for a few episodes now, just picking out a topic and then sort of talking about it. And this time we're going to talk about cross-dressing.
We have been talking about transsexuality and transitioning issues quite a bit lately, so we can look at the other side of the fence.
Well, that's a side of the fence that I started on.
Everyone starts there, don't they, really? Some of the young kids seem to know themselves really well, really early, and I guess they're the lucky ones, but yeah, I guess the rest of us all start a journey somewhere in a cross-dressing vein somehow, don't we?
My cross-dressing sort of started from my very early childhood, and I suppose I freely admit that I did many things wrong and attracted a lot of unwanted attention. I suppose looking back on those days, my skirts were too short, my makeup was too thick. I think you used to say to me that it looks as though it was put on with a spatula.
Spack filler it was in those
days. Oh, that's right, spack filler, yeah.
Did you ever actually wear that? I remember going with you once to buy clothes, and you bought a bright green lycra mini skirt. Did you ever wear that?
No,
it just didn't.
And I've still got it at home.
An impulse buy. Oh, like I've got a wardrobe full of impulse buys that at the time thought seemed like a really, really good idea until you put them on and go, oh, not really. And bright lime green.
It was very bright, wasn't
iridescent
it?
Green miniskirt. I'm sure we can get a photo of you on the Joy website at some stage.
No, thank you. But that's one of the points that I want to bring up is, and I think this probably applies to a lot of people, that you start off sort of really going a bit overboard in your idea of femininity. I think a lot of us tend to think short skirts are the ultimate in femininity, and lots of makeup and ultra high heels. But when you look around at people in the street, or the women in the street or down the supermarket, that's not them.
No, but what happens, and this has been described to me many times, is that what happens when a transgender person comes out and starts their journey and they start cross-dressing? They go through like a teenage girl puberty, and they tend to dress like a teenage girl does.
It's like trying to go, you know, from 12 to 20 in basically a year.
Really quickly,
yes.
Yeah. But you have to do it. It's like a coming of age. It's an unpleasant and untidy coming of age, but I guess, you know, I suspect everyone does it, but I don't know. A lot of the people that I've met and over the years, they've come out and everyone owns a mini skirt. Perhaps not a micro mini skirt with green lycra, but Everyone does tend to, you buy them because, oh, this is what people are wearing. Mm.
But the styles have, I suppose, have changed a little bit for people of my age. But I've still got all that short stuff at home somewhere, but it doesn't see the light of day.
No, I remember.
Not even in private. It doesn't.
My first night at Seahorse, God, it was pretty much when you joined Seahorse as well, wasn't it? It must be 15 or 20 years ago.
Around about 20 years ago.
Oh, that's scary. I forgot where I was going with this. But I do remember it was not considered appropriate in those days for people to turn up wearing jeans.
Correct.
There was a policy in those days that, women don't wear jeans.
But if you went down to the supermarket, what were they wearing?
Everyone was wearing jeans, that's right. But it was considered not appropriate in those days. I mean, Seahorse has come a long way as well. But that was the way people thought in those days.
Correct.
The cross-dressing, or I guess they were, the cross-dressing community felt that if you're going to cross-dress, you have to wear a skirt or a dress or something like that.
Well, I actually went out to dinner on Sunday night round a friend's place, and it was the first time I'd worn a dress. Oh, I can't think in how many months.
Really? Really? Yeah. It is nice to stick one on from time to time.
It is, yes. Yeah.
We've got an email here from Rebecca. My worst clothing decision was a leopard print winter jacket. So glad I no longer have it. It made me look like a cheap tramp. Oh, come on, Rebecca. I'm sure any number of things that you wore could have made you look like a cheap tramp.
She'll get you for that.
Yes. Yeah, but we all do. You do. It's just, I don't know what it is or why it is.
I think that when you first start cross-dressing, you tend to, you have this idea of what femininity is in your mind. Mm-hmm. But I think that we tend to think of teenage girls, which means short skirts, high heels, and in maybe some ways looking a bit tarty.
Yes, yeah, and honestly, I can't explain it either, but yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Now, other than clothing, makeup, my recommendation, which is not what I used to do, but what I should have done, was, as my partner says, less is always best.
And it's true.
Don't go overboard.
And it's, well, yes, I don't think anyone would disagree with you.
But oh, good.
It doesn't happen, but
I suppose that we all tend to think that, you know, we've got to hide all the male features. And as the psychiatrist said when I was going through the process, one of the things he said to me, it's like a mask, wearing makeup. Yeah, it's something you can hide behind.
A lot of it's to do with gender indicators. And I guess that's why a lot of people, when they first come out, wear skirts, whether they're short or long or whatever. Mm-hmm. They try to remove as many male gender indicators as possible.
Correct.
So hiding the beard shadow is important. Mm-hmm. So more makeup, or certainly around the beard area.
Or you can use good quality stage makeup, which is what I did, and it still uses because I found the colour that I like and I'm happy with it. Mm-hmm. And one of those little, so I suppose about a 1 ounce tub or 1.25 gram or ounce tub, whatever it is, lasts me about 9 to 10 months. So oh. I don't use very much of it.
But you don't buy this from Target and Kmart, I'm guessing, do
no, you?
No,
you can't get this stuff. It's I think it's actually a stage makeup. I know at least one place in Melbourne that sells it, but I won't name any names. No. I'm not allowed to do that. And I suppose the other thing would be, from my point of view, again, mistakes I made. Don't go overboard with the eyeshadow. You know, bright blue, it was not really a good look for me.
Well, I've always been a fan of big eyes. Mm. Big eyes and pale lips has always been my preference. Mm. It is difficult with the makeup because, like I said, if you can remove gender indicators with a dress and some makeup and, you know, and hair and everything else that you've got to do or can do to remove it, I guess you stand out less. And that's the whole point of it, is somehow the mentality is, you know, I just wish to blend in, even though at the time you're wearing a miniskirt, heels
and
too much
out.
Makeup. Yeah. Yeah, certainly too much makeup for daytime. It's perhaps all of these things fade into insignificance at night time because, you know, you can be going out, have a drink in a bar, whatever. None of that matters. But certainly when you're going shopping, you know, a truckload of makeup and heels and skirts, they just don't really go these days if you want to blend in.
Correct. One of the other questions that was sort of posed to me actually about this topic, it's not a topic I came up with, but I can thank our friend Rebecca for suggesting this one.
The cheap tramp.
Yes, that one.
That's the one.
Yeah. Where to get clothes from?
Yes. You mean the very, very early days?
Yes, in your early
Where
day.
Do you buy your first skirt when you're presenting as male? Because you're right, it's a tough call. Because if you've got no female clothes, you can't go shopping in Kmart and go into the changing rooms because it doesn't quite work, does it?
No. Well, I think my first clothes came from one of the local op shops. And I think I remember going in with some male clothes at the time and this skirt or top sort of all mixed up together. And I went in and sort of tried on the girl things. Didn't worry about the boy things and came out, and there's a way of sort of trying them on sort of surreptitiously. But I made a lot of mistakes in the clothes that I bought.
Oh, yeah. I did too, but I guess when I was first coming out, and you were to a large extent, we used to meet at an op shop that was open on a Thursday night for us down Mentone. We'd meet down there, and it had been widely promoted, I guess, as far as you can within the pseudo community in those days and without the internet, as somewhere where cross dressers could turn up to get dressed.
Yes. So and you buy clothes.
And try clothes on. I guess there was a good commerce in it for the lady who ran the show, and it was good for people who wanted to start out on the journey and get some clothes, get at least something in the wardrobe so they could go shopping the next day somewhere else. Mm. So that was a good thing. But I know after a while I just lost interest in the whole I'm going to hide this. And certainly with op shops, you can go there and say, look, I just need to try on this leather skirt. Even presenting as male, and they go, yep, no worries.
Well, I actually found a mauve skirt that I like in Northland. And I saw it there one night, so just before closing time, and, oh, you know, I like that. Anyway, I ended up going in the following day, and they'd shifted it.
Oh, don't you hate
anyway,
that?
Anyway.
Especially when you're feeling nervous and anxious, and you know I'm going to go straight there, grab that, and that'll do.
And I was on my way to work.
Oh, good.
So I was going in late that morning for some reason. I think I had a bit of time off. I said to the girl, oh, there's a mauve skirt here. And she said, oh, it's over here. And she went and got it, and it's my size. And I said, oh, can I try it on? Oh, yeah. Can you just wait till that woman comes out of the change room? Said, yeah, okay. So I had to wait, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, and then I went in, change. Oh, yeah, if this fits, okay. Bought it.
Didn't wear it to work that day, though.
No, I didn't wear it to work that
day. No, no. Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I guess these days with the returns policies of all the major department stores, I guess if you've got an idea of how, you know, what size you are, you just buy it. If it doesn't fit, take it back the next day and get a larger size. But,
the large chain stores do tend to have fairly good policies regarding transgender clients.
Oh, that's if you're presenting as female, if you're buying female
yeah,
clothing.
Or male if you're female to male. But I don't know how they'd go if you just sort of walked in male where there was some female clothes and said, oh, I want to try these on. I've got no idea.
There's a question, Jane, and we'll perhaps wrap this part up just in a tick. Female to male cross-dressers. Is there such a thing, do you think?
Well, I don't know. According to some stats I actually saw today or yesterday when I was doing some research, about 1 in 100,000 in the US.
But no, that's female to male transsexuals.
Yeah.
What about female to male cross-dressers? Do you think?
Well, a lot of the clothing for women, a lot of it's actually cut, sort of, or, you know, is it very much in a male style?
Well, is it jeans and flat shoes, or runners and jeans,
well,
not an issue,
well,
is
I'm
it?
Even thinking about sort of some of the jackets that I've seen for women, they look very male. And I've seen quite a few women who are very smartly dressed in basically what looks like a male suit. But no one gives them a second glance.
No, I guess to be a true female-to-male cross-dresser, you'd have to do something. I guess you'd have to bind your chest.
Yes.
I guess fundamentally to flatten out the boobs. And I don't know about the face. It's always very difficult because a lot of the female-to-male transsexuals I've met have generally been on testosterone, so they're starting to develop a level of facial hair. But early on, and I did meet one boy once, looked like a very young, fabulously young man in male clothing, and he hunched over in very much the way men sit, you know, poor posture, daggy male clothes, short cropped hair. I mean, and I only knew that he was in the journey from female to male because he said so. Otherwise, you could have any number of guesstimates. Oh, I think it's a girl, or I think it's a boy, or, you know, I'm not really sure what that person is. It could have been a lot of lesbians that you meet tend to dress very masculine. So it's very hard to say whether there's a female to male actual cross dressers, unless I guess they do some kind of dark makeup on the face around the beard area to look like Fred Flintstone.
It's not an area that I have any experience in.
It's a tough one. We'll talk about it further in a moment. Transmission time with Jane and Lauren. Transmission Time with Jane and Lauren and Britney Spears is stronger, and I'm sure you're a lot stronger as well, Jane, for all your experiences.
Well, I'd like to think that I'm a lot stronger than I used to be.
That's those biceps of yours.
No, the whole man saw to that very quickly.
Yes, our weekly topic is cross-dressing. And you were going to talk about social groups, because I guess there are still people, I imagine people out there now listening on the web somewhere in Munich, just thinking about coming out and moving on. We can't really help you much overseas, but what about Melbourne?
Well, Melbourne, probably the main group for cross-dressing would be Seahorse Club of Victoria, which I joined many, many years ago and found it to be a great advantage. It gave me an enormous amount of confidence to actually come out and to basically find who I was.
Because we were mingling, and I was with you at the time, mingling with, the meetings had 40 or 50 people, generally all trans women, pretty much. We didn't get too many trans men come along, but all with exactly the same issues.
Yes.
And I guess they help with makeup, they help with clothes, and they help with your self-esteem.
And I think that was the main thing. In my sort of very early days, I used to think that, you know, cross-dressing, all wrong, nasty, maybe I should be in prison for doing this, and in some countries you would be. But what Seahorse gave me was, I suppose, a lot of mental support, that here I am in a room with other cross-dressers who have the same issues that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Some were sort of further down the track than me, and some of them have transitioned well before me, and I dare say there'll be a few coming along after me who will transition. But it was a great environment. And one that I'd highly recommend. There's also groups like, there's an email group called Melbourne Girls, which they have some interesting discussions in that as well. Your social groups are all about support and learning often about your own issues and coming to terms with yourself.
Well, it's learning how other people dealt with the exactly same issues that you have.
Yes.
And it helps you kind of, oh yeah, well, if Christina did that, okay, I think I can manage that. And you kind of, I know I did. I found some mentors in the social groups that we were members of, and they just kind of helped me deal with some of the emotional issues was part of it, but just a lot of the logistical issues as well, and how do you do this, and how do you get around that, and I guess how do you explain yourself to your partner and to your friends?
That's a whole topic in itself.
Well, it is. As you move through cross-dressing, you tend to have to come out at some point. I guess you don't have to come out, but you want to come out.
Well, it does make life a lot easier. One of the problems that I had was that I had two sort of young teenagers, and they were starting to question why Dad was going out on a Sunday night. I think my partner said, he's out with friends.
Mm.
Dad doesn't have any friends.
There was me, but you never invited me round.
True. Yeah,
that's right. You're almost living a dual... Well, you are living a dual life, aren't you, at that point?
Yes.
Because you do have friends, and we had a lot of friends in the community in those days, and used to run balls and functions and all sorts of stuff. And obviously when you're presenting as who you believe you truly are, you tend to drift towards that side of your personality, and you want to spend more time presenting as who you are.
Correct.
Until, like you go off and do the full transition and have overseas holidays and stuff.
Well, there might be an overseas holiday coming up next year. I'm not sure yet.
Oh, another one. Okay.
The other question that got posed to me was getting over the paranoia. How do you do that? In the early days when I went out, I was paranoid that people were going to pick me. You know, these days,
who cares? Not pick you for a fight, but identify you as a trans person. Yeah, it's true. As a cross-dresser, I guess.
Yes.
And you perceived that to be bad, didn't you?
Yes, I did. These days, I don't think it sort of worries me sort of quite as much. Yes, I don't like being sort of picked and pointed at. And occasionally you get the odd look, but...
Well, no one likes being pointed at and ridiculed, I guess.
But, you know, a little bit of facial surgery on a holiday has done wonders, actually. And
that's what you think, dear. But yes, I agree. If nothing else, it's done wonders for your self-confidence.
That's right. And I think a lot of it is about your self-confidence, how well you feel about yourself, and... it's just a long, drawn-out process, and I don't know if there's an easy way around it.
No. Someone did at Seahorse years ago said to me, because I was so embarrassed, I was so ashamed at being there, just at who I was, and I guess this would transpose across the gay and lesbian community as well. I was so ashamed of who I was. Someone at Seahorse one night said, just push your tits out, stick your chin up, and just get out there. And don't
and
let
you've been doing that ever since, haven't you?
I have been doing that, but if they recognise who you were, don't let it bother you. you know, it's not your concern. Mm. People are concerned about it for 3 seconds when you're walking past, and then we all move on. And they also said the more you're out there, the less they're looking at someone else. And I think it was good advice just to deal with it because, you know, there's people out there in this day and age, and I don't want to talk about the olden days. These days, self-expression is there everywhere. You know, there's facial piercings and half the footy players on TV have got tattoos all over the place. Mm. And people are less looked down upon for how they present.
I think there's been some large changes in our society. Well, certainly in the 20 years when you and I basically started getting serious about this stuff. And I think a lot of that has been brought about by the media. There are trans people turning up in the media. There are gay and lesbian people turning up in the media.
And it's accessible on the internet as well, yes. Isn't it? You can Google trans, where I guess 20 years ago when you and I came out, it was...
There was no Google.
There was no Google, no. So I guess information is far more widely available. I still think we're a long way behind the gay and lesbian community in terms of acceptance.
Probably by about 10, 15 years, I'd reckon.
So do you think if you were coming out today, would you still have the paranoia? Remembering how you were 20 years ago?
At a personal level, yeah, I think I probably would. Because I think it's a developmental thing that you have to go through. Unless you're sort of really, really confident, and I think that in my early days I wasn't confident. I think I'm a lot more confident of socially now to get out there, whereas 20 years ago, as my male persona, no, I wasn't what you'd call a confident person.
No, well, certainly, and I knew you back then, but I think a lot of the confidence has come from the inside.
Oh, yes, definitely.
You have to be able to be prepared to say, look, that's it, I'm going out. I remember sitting in the car outside the Peel nightclub for an hour one night. I was in a gay and lesbian area, fabulous, accepting, tolerant area. It was 11 o'clock at night and I could not get myself out of the car because I was ashamed and embarrassed about who I was. And I thought people would look at me in the street and poke fun. And mind you, we did get eggs. Myself and one of my girlfriends got eggs thrown at us one day, but that's another story. This was probably before then that I couldn't get out of the car. Mm. And it's
all about
it comes from inside. It comes from inside with a little bit of bullying from people in your support network saying, no, you got to do it. Anyway, we have harped on. Got to move forward with the show. And we have some... Oh, we'll talk about pumping shortly.
Yes. We got another email from Rebecca. That's it, Lauren. Next time on air with you, I'm wearing an evening gown.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yes, and another one, best thing about social groups, real or online, is they let you know you're not alone. We'll move forward. Transmission time. Black Eyed Peas, sorry, Jane.
We were both going to back announce at the same time. We should plan this a bit better, Lauren.
Black Eyed Peas, Meet Me Halfway. There, I've done it. Life from a Transgender Perspective with Jane and Lauren. We finished off on cross-dressing, although we did get a couple of messages. Big hi to Greg in Geelong. Thank you for listening at your desk. You really shouldn't be working at this time of night, though.
I think you got that one mixed up. He's in Canberra.
Where did I say?
Geelong.
Oh, no, mix in Geelong. Sends a lovely message through, and we are getting text messages through, it would appear. I love listening to your show and look forward to it each Wednesday. Sunshine and encouragement to all of your listeners. Thanks, Jane, for putting up some of the podcasts, which you have been doing, Mick from Geelong.
Well, there's a new one up there, which is actually quite an old one. It was, it's actually over a year old, but it's an interview with Dr. Craig Smith from the Murdoch Children's Institute, I think it is, talking about changing the genes in chicken embryos to change their sex.
Oh, we talked to Craig about 12 months ago about that.
That's the one I've just put up.
Well, I might listen to it. It's on the Joy website, is it?
Yes. Just go to the top where it says podcasts and follow the links to Transmission Time and you'll find it.
We're going to interview Craig in the next few weeks, aren't we? There's been some more genetic movements in terms of...
He's off overseas, I think, next week, so it might be about a month before we get round to him.
He's a geneticist. The times we've had him, and also remember the geneticists we had in from the Royal Melbourne Hospital, I think?
The Prince Henry's Institute, Lauren Hare and Ian Muchamore, that was.
They all seem to be finding that gender is gene-based.
Yes. They?
They're all finding things on the DNA string that when they're switched on or switched off, that people with these specific genes have a much greater chance of becoming trans or identifying as trans.
But the one thing they say that there doesn't appear to be just one gene. They believe it's a succession of genes. Like in one of the tests I think Lauren Hare did was... that they found that there was about a 60% variation in one particular gene for transsexuals. that's sort of like sort of a bit of an indication, but it wasn't, this gene didn't get changed in everybody. So, so they believe that there's a number of genes that have to be changed to
a number of things have to happen. Yes. If certain ducks are in a row, they create you and I. Yes. Apparently. Anyway, tell me about pumping, Jane.
Well, pumping is not a very nice way of body modification.
It's very much something in the trans. It's trans related, isn't it?
It is.
I guess you don't see too much of this.
Well, fortunately, I haven't heard of it in Australia. It's a very dangerous procedure. Basically, what it is that a pumper will pump silicon into your body.
And they're called a pumper because they're pumping silicon into your body?
Correct.
So they could be a motor mechanic by day, but they're a pumper by night if they're prepared to pump silicon. And it's raw silicon, isn't it?
That's right. It's loose silicon. It isn't like in a breast implant that's like a gel that basically stays where it's put. If you cut it, it doesn't sort of run all over the place like the old silicon implants used to do. It's sort of very dangerous. If it gets into your system,
it's almost liquid silicon, isn't it?
Yes,
if people are getting pumped into their hips and into their chests to give them a female form.
There are a couple of problems. One, first of all, they tend not to use medical grade silicon. They often use industrial grade silicons. They'll mix it with things like baby oil and, in some cases, even industrial oils.
And the idea is to pack out the hips and pack out the breasts.
Correct.
In a really short time without surgery and really cheap.
There's a case here of a Miss Quespy who said that her first injections were actually done in a Upper East Side apartment. It's in the US. As she lay in a small room on a narrow passage table, having paid $1,200 to get 4 cups of silicon injected into her hips and buttocks without anaesthesia. Evidently, when she slid off the makeshift table, she saw bright red drops of blood, and the pumper said, oh, that's easy, we'll fix that, and got crazy glue, which I assume is something like our super glue, and just basically put that over each of the wounds to seal them up. Now, not what you'd call very sort of hygienic. Anyway, this person was very happy with the results.
Really? Even after all that? What, until she died 3 days later?
No, well, she didn't quite die 3 days later. But she ended up having photos on her desk of a new figure. She had a really nice figure. But over time, she actually paid a very high price for this because in time, the silicon in her body calcified and it began to migrate. So it didn't stay where it was put. And evidently, she had quite a number of hospitalizations to try and fix the problem. And beginning of July, she was hospitalized for infection. Her body had been left scarred and misshapen. So because the silicon moved around from where it was supposed to stay...
Because it's not sitting anywhere in particular, is it?
That's correct,
yes. It's simply just going to move through the body. So yeah. if you walk a lot, one would assume that gravity would push it down.
Would tend to move it around. Anyway, the skin on buttocks and legs had become discolored, and a lump of hardened silicon the size of a golf ball hangs behind her left knee.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Now, she said that she knew the person doing it didn't have any training, but she couldn't afford to go to a doctor to get implants. There was another case where somebody basically flew into Philadelphia in February this year, a 20-year-old woman. She'd flown in from London for the injections and died shortly after receiving them.
Wow.
No, it's not a very...
So it's not... But I've heard of pumping parties in the US where a whole bunch of trans women get together and basically get pumped up with silicon.
That's right. It can be fatal. Quote here in the article...
I'm not coming to yours then. I'm going to... I'll do the Tupperware thing instead.
Well, the article actually called The High Price of Looking Like a Woman. And there's a quote in here, pumpers are preying on desperate people who are poor. They're basically killing people and getting profit from it.
Don't try this at home.
It can be a very expensive exercise in transitioning, but please don't do it that way. Find a reputable surgeon and have them do the work, not some backyard shonky.
Wow, written, spoken and authorised. Transmission time with Jane and Lauren. We'll be back in a couple of tickets. Tickets? What, moments? Something like that?
Something like that.
We'll wrap it up shortly. Transmission time with Jane and Lauren. A few bits and pieces that have been going on, Jane. There's some UK sex swap babies.
If I find the article, yes.
Well, I think we talked about it a while ago. There was a trans man and a trans woman who had actually somehow managed to get themselves together.
Ah, yes.
Mummy couldn't have babies, so daddy did it for her.
That's right. Evidently, when little Dante is old enough, his parents are going to basically sit him down and explain that mummy couldn't have babies, so daddy did it for her. And that's because...
That'll be fun at kinder, won't it?
Could be, could be. And that's because the toddler was born to the world's most amazing families. His mum, Emily, was born a boy, and his father, Kay, was born a girl. And doctors are baffled, believing it's medically impossible for dad, which is Chai 24, to give birth, and as Emily was also thought to be sterile.
Of course, because that's part of the transitioning process. The estrogen gradually prevents the sperm thing working.
They quote here as saying, "We didn't plan on having a baby," says Emily. "We didn't try to make it happen, nor do we think it could happen. We were planning on adopting because, as far as we knew, having a baby was on our own an impossibility separately, let alone together."
These two had unprotected sex.
Yes.
Which is in itself is a little bizarre, isn't it? Because I believe Emily had been on hormones since she was 16. So normally that's enough to prevent an erection and certainly to prevent sperm being produced.
Correct.
So the fact that they're able to actually have sex the opposite way to way a typical heterosexual couple would be, and I guess these two would be classified as a heterosexual couple, except mum's got a penis and dad has a vagina and they've had sex and now dad's pregnant. That's honestly...
That's confusing, isn't it?
It's such a party conversation, isn't it?
It is, Lauren.
Yes, how was your day today? Oh, I found out I'm pregnant. Oh, you better shave the beard off, I guess, then. Fun and games. Wow, we'll follow that one through, I think, Jane. But yes, we do need to get out of here. And we'll be back. Are you going to come in next week, do you think?
Yes, I'm here next week.
Okay,
are you
well,
here next
all
week?
All things being equal, I'll be here next week as well, and we'll have more of life from a transgender perspective. And we'll see you next week.
Good night.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.